Dimitrios Kastaris and the Latin Jazz Coalition with Mambo Bembe is from their 2000 album Trombón con Sazón. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And I tell you, well, it's going to continue to be more and more insane until it arrives at the inevitable end. And I'm referring, of course, to the partial shutdown of the federal government. And your president, I give him to you, I don't want him, deciding that, yes, he's going to call a national security issue, and that will, in his view, give him all of the power he needs to go ahead with the construction of a fence, a steel fence along the border, the southern border of the United States, that abuts the country of Mexico. We'll see how that works. I always try to remind myself that part of what is going on here is, of course, I've likened it to a stick-up, where a guy goes into a bank, demands all the money in the bank, and threatens to shoot everybody in the bank if he doesn't get it. It gets more and more ridiculous, but apparently, even though that you see some signs that where the country is right now is not at all satisfactory to millions of people, it nonetheless exists. And we're not yet seeing the appropriate signals from Congress, nor from the labor union movement in particular, considering that more than 800,000 federal employees are affected, along with their families, of course. And it's going to be, the net is going to be widened so that it takes in people who are very vulnerable in our society, people who are on public assistance, people who are receiving what used to be called food stamps, and the like. Because, you know, it's the kind of thing that Trump relishes. He really does relish this. By the way, the fence that he says that he wants was put to the test and was found to be very vulnerable to people just sawing through it. You know, imagine after spending all that money, $5.7 billion, and that's just for the fence. We're not talking about personnel. We're not talking about additional courts to process applications. We're not talking about places that have to be built, buildings that have to be built to accommodate those people who are arrested. We're not talking about any of that. But imagine that after all this trouble, and this is the fence that he absolutely is convinced will work. There's a photograph today in the news that's circulating showing the yawning gap, a hole that was left after somebody took a saw to it and sawed their way right through the fence. So much for that as holding back the flow of the unwanted masses from the south. We are so insane as a country, putting up with this, and it has become normal. This kind of insanity has become normal. And I have to remember, I have to remind myself literally every day that this is not part of me. This is not part of me. I refuse to acknowledge it as being part of me. This is a serious problem. It's not our problem, really. We are, of course, enmeshed in it. But how to get out of a situation where we are hostages and there's a madman who has stuck up the whole country. He's demanding a ransom for us. Well, the ransom also includes some of the Obama era initiatives, including DACA, which is the special initiative that Obama had launched to protect the status of individuals, especially younger people who had come to the country under great duress and were facing otherwise immediate deportation back to their countries of origin and facing, of course, a very uncertain future. So the whole country is in turmoil. It's in turmoil. And there is no immediate sign that there will be a logical, sensible, intelligent, rational conclusion to the madness that is going on. Like I've said before, it took only 2 years for Donald Trump to come out of nowhere and turn this country on its head. Of course, aided and abetted by a compliant media, by a groundswell of racism and white supremacy in this country, by dog whistle politics. Everybody knows what he's talking about, what he means to do, who he means to target, and it's acceptable. But they decided not to pay attention. They've decided not to pay attention to what is clearly to anybody who has observed this president over even the shortest period of time, that there's something dramatically wrong with this president, psychologically, emotionally, mentally, however you choose to define it. There's something dramatically wrong. And the country sinks deeper and deeper into a morass every single day. Because, on the one hand, while the president is conducting business as if the entire country is owned by him, it is his personal property, we don't see a coordinated effort as one would have expected. We are not seeing a coordinated effort to just say, this is not who we are. And we won't tolerate a president who intends to take us there. And who, by any measure, you could say, has succeeded beyond anybody's expectation in doing just that. So today I thought I would talk about a subject that really hasn't been broached from the point of view of people's understanding of it. The word immigration has been thrown around a lot. Immigration and words associated with immigration, migration, migrants. These words and concepts are thrown around quite a bit. But what do they mean? And what do they mean in this society in particular, since we're getting a lot of news attached to this word, immigration. A lot of our politics centers on the word immigration. A lot of our social attitudes centers on immigration. We kind of have a sense of what it is, and but what is it really? How do we define this word? And to what extent do we recognize that what it represents, this word immigration, has become so pivotal to our consciousness, our everyday consciousness in the United States? What is it? What is it supposed to do? What is it supposed to be? How did it evolve? And how does it continue to evolve? How do we know that with respect to immigration as a whole, as a nation, do we agree it's a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Is it something that we need to fear? These are, I'm asking from a regular person's point of view. I'm not expecting you to be ambassadors and diplomats, but from your own understanding, your own observation, what is this thing called immigration? And why is it figuring so prominently in our everyday lives and not in a good way? Immigration is something that we need to be cautious and fearful about. But we don't know what it is. When you stop and think about it, we really don't know what this country means by immigration. We know it involves people coming here to the United States. But that's not all that there is to know about it. Why is there such a fixation, and increasingly, I should say, in recent years, there is a fixation, and even I'd go so far to say an over fixation about immigration. And of course, as we know, the United States isn't the only country fixated about it, obsessed about it. So that's what we are going to talk about today. I want you to relate to the question from your own personal perspective, because in the end, we the people are the ones who are playing a major role in this thing called immigration and all of the other things attendant to it, politics, elections, even housing, employment. All these things are affected by this big thing called immigration. So I'm asking, what is it? What is it supposed to be? What is it supposed to do? Why has it emerged as such a major force in our lives as a nation? All right, 888-874-4888 is the number to call, and let's get to it. Chris from West Palm Beach, you start us off today.
Patrice, good afternoon. How you doing?
Okay, Chris, how are you?
I'm well. Can't complain.
You could
to answer
complain
your
nobody's
question,
listening.
I
I try
mean, I
complaining and
could.
nobody's listening to me.
That's what they always told me. You can complain, but nobody's going to listen. So, I'm good. But anyway, to answer your question, why does it play such a big role in our lives today? Well, one, because it's one of those. Go ahead.
How about tackling, Chris, the first part of the question? What is it? What do you understand immigration to be about?
Well, being the child of two immigrants, I think for the people who migrate, I think it's about them looking for a better opportunity elsewhere, first and foremost, for the individuals who decide to move.
Okay.
I mean, to me, that's basically it. I mean, if you live in some of these other countries that don't have some of the freedoms that we do have here, this place looks a little bit more attractive as opposed to some place where you live under a dictatorship or where there's ongoing, never-ending wars. America looks really good from the distance.
Why has it emerged as being such a primal force in our everyday lives?
To me, I see two primary reasons for it. One is because it's one of those topics or issues that there will never be a consensus on. So while you can leave us stuck arguing about immigration and make that a big thing so nothing else ever gets addressed. The second reason, just to be quite honest, is that it can be used as a to scare the white population, at least some segments of the white population, as we see with Trump and his base. If you notice in the with Trump, he'll talk about nonsense, and when things aren't going good, what does he do? He almost always pivots back to immigration because his base is fearful for a number of reasons.
Could you tell us what you think are some of those reasons?
Well, one, they're afraid that they're going to be replaced and that they're going to look around and America's going to be, 50% other and or even more as we, move along in time. So they're afraid for that reason. I think those people, I think, is their, that's what drives them to be so concerned about immigration.
Well, you certainly made some strong points, and I'm sure that there would be follow-ups by others, but thank you for getting us started strongly today. Thanks, Chris, for
All
calling
right,
in.
thanks, Patrice. Have a good one.
You too. George from New York, you're on the air.
Hello,
What is this thing
Patrice.
called immigration?
A lot of immigrants, no matter where they're from, if you're a person from Harlem and close to Harlem, you have an idea of the struggles throughout the world. A lot of immigrants I run into, they don't have any they don't have anything about our struggle here. They know nothing about it. A guy, I asked a guy, he was from a part of Africa. I said, "Do you know who Paul Robeson is? Do you know what town you're in? You're in the town where they wanted to, they had the riot for Paul Robeson." He didn't know nothing about Paul Robeson. So they don't know anything about our struggle here.
Do they have
For the,
to?
huh?
Are they obligated to?
Are they what?
Are they obliged to know something? Are they
No, they're not really obliged. They're not
required
really
to know?
obliged. A lot of them are very arrogant, and a lot of them don't really care about what we've went through here, and they're very arrogant.
But let me ask you, if the situation were reversed, let's say you ended up in Accra, would it not be the case that the same would be said of you?
Well, No, I don't think so. Now, I mean, unless you, as we was coming up, unless you're just trying to be bougie or whatever, that's how we got a class of those kind of people. But I mean, the people who knew about Malcolm and so forth and so on, and the other things that the struggles. There's no more core. There's no more this and no more. There's a lot of things where we got along together. But I was on a job. And I hate to, and the guys just kept on saying Mississippi, Mississippi. And this was in the 70s. And I'm looking at, what is he talking about? Then I got the idea that I got the news from him that he saw the hoses on people in America. So he figured, he's here now. He's not of our nationality. And he can do the same thing. See, he could act the same way. So that's why I say a lot of immigrants, they're not worried about any kind of struggle here. They're not worried about it. So that's all I have to say. They don't know the history of this place.
But do you understand, or do you accept, not as a criticism, but just as just a fact, one of the outstanding features of immigration and immigrants is that it is by necessity a very self-centered thing. Immigrants are leaving a set of circumstances that are peculiar to them, and their highest priority is what? Survival. They don't have time to be learning a new culture and learning how life is lived in another part of the world. Their thing is, I've got to survive, and I am on a tight deadline. So I'm focused, super focused on what I have to do. Why? Because we may not see it, we may not understand it, but there are people whose family's situation back home is so dire. They're not thinking about their new surroundings and how to navigate their new surroundings. They're thinking only of what do they have to do to keep those folks back home eating and having a roof over their heads. Now, of course, when people come here or they go to a new country, the natural reaction is a kind of resentment to say, well, wait a minute. You didn't come here to be part of us. You are still psychologically tied to your home. And, you know, why should we want you here if you are not contributing to what we consider to be our shared society? What do you say?
Yeah, you have something that, but in the 60s, when all the rallies in the city, you had people from everywhere. Their idea was not to come to this materialistic thing. They wanted their country to themselves. They're not the same now. These are not the same people. I mean, you're not going to bring me the untouchable mentality when you see me and you can't figure out what I am. But I'm not going to get too close to you. I've had this happen.
See, but you see,
that's what I'm saying. Don't bring the colonial. Huh?
There are assumptions made on both sides.
So yeah, but I don't think we have it the same.
They're valid in the sense that this, in many ways, is how people actually do act. And I know this. I'm an immigrant. I'm a citizen, but I'm an immigrant.
Yeah, but you're from the Caribbean.
Yeah,
that's a whole different ball game. And you can be from someplace in India, and you might think that I'm not worth being near. I've had it happen recently, and we have it happen. So you can't bring your low class or whatever, not touchable people mentality here. That's what I'm talking about. I can't deal with these people who think that they're better than me. You got to be kidding. you know, I say, and you know, I mean, are you think you can
people
snob
on the
me?
Other side of the fence saying the same thing?
Yeah, but if you're talking about people of color, a lot of them don't even know anything about these other people. They wouldn't know an Aborigine if they saw one. See, so we've been culturally assassinated the last 40 or 50 years. So that's what I'm saying. I mean, there's a whole lot to this whole thing.
Is there a way, in your view, is there a way through this?
Is there a way through it?
Yeah.
There probably is. I mean, I'm not really qualified to say which way to go, and so forth and so on. But I'm just saying the things that I am personally, every day or sometime during the week, I'm gonna face this nonsense. I don't want somebody telling me, you can use the ATM thing. I said no. I came to the teller. That's how I do it. I don't even mess with that thing, because you got a job now and you can tell me that I should go there. You're out of your mind. I know what I want to do.
You're describing one of the casualties that we suffer on all sides because of the way immigration is introduced to us, because of the way we understand immigration. Thank you for your insights today, George. Thanks so much. Ma'at from New York, you're on the air.
Greetings to the beloved family. Yeah, I agree with you. This is an appalling situation. One of the things that's not really being clear in the you know, the more balanced mainstream media, is that if the Democrats, conclude that they need to do any kind of a negotiation for any kind of policy under, you know, what you call the stick-up, that it would become a regular tool, you know, for any president, and, of course, especially this one. Another thing that's being forgotten is that when you have so-called good employment figures, and that's always dicey because people are working two and three jobs, and we know that black unemployment is, you know, it's better, but it's, you know, not great, is that you have people such as families, you know, coming from Central America, who will fill the jobs that, you know, those difficult and unpleasant jobs, whether in agriculture, meat processing, or what's going to be for the baby boomers. I saw a piece in PBS's NewsHour where just in Michigan alone, you know, they were showing home health care workers scrambling from one side of town to another and just totally, you know, without the personnel needed. So they were saying that, you know, coming up, they're going to need 30,000 people to keep the baby boomers in their homes as opposed to in nursing homes. So there's a lot that's not being discussed. And, of course, since we have such a racist, in-your-face, xenophobic president, that's, of course, his way, you know, to mark brown people with his racism.
So what do you say immigration is supposed to be, and what is it supposed to do?
Well, one thing that it does, and of course, you know, there's always that shibboleth about, oh, America is built on immigration, but it first of all, diversity is always good. You know, like in New York City, you know, we have all different kinds of foods, and that's important. And, you know, just getting a lifeblood from people who look at things from a different point of view, that's very important for society.
But that's a social issue. I'm asking from a governmental or official or political perspective, what is immigration supposed to be and do from a policy position?
Well, it depends on who's in charge of the policy. You know, it used to be, I mean, just look at how the Republicans handled it. They understood the importance of it for certain areas in business. And so, you know, there was a coalition. I think it was H.W. Bush, the other Bush and Reagan, you know, lauding immigration. So the look at the policy depends on the view at any particular time. You know, I think Reagan gave some type of, I don't know all the details, some type of amnesty. You know, there was not this xenophobia that we're dealing with under these Republicans and under Trump. And, of course, if the Democrats, first of all, you can't have any policy done while people are suffering in terms of federal workers and things are being undone, whether it's food inspection or can you imagine the air traffic controllers not being paid? Can you really feel safe? If you know, people are going to be beat down and they tend to be angry and they're not going to be able to do decent and good jobs. You know, they're going to feel stressed and squeezed. So there's all kinds of ramifications in what's being done in this country. But it also goes back to somebody this president being absolutely unfit. I don't know if you saw or heard about the piece in Sunday's New York Times by David Leonhard, the people versus Donald Trump. He said, whatever way you look at it, and he didn't put the Russia gate. He listed four different areas why at some point we have to deal with the fact that this president is just simply unfit and not up to the job.
All right, but that's a discussion for another time. Today we're talking about immigration, but thank you so much
for
contributing today. Jeff from New York. Oh, no, from New Jersey. Sorry. Hello, Jeff.
That's okay. All right. How are you doing?
Okay. What is immigration supposed, in your view, what is it supposed to be and what is it supposed to do?
Immigration is supposed to provide opportunity for people to come in and contribute to America and contribute to themselves, or let America contribute to them. It's supposed to be a new blood. Like she just pointed out, you know, it gives you different. It helps you with a different set of eyes to see the same problems, maybe correct some problems, maybe invent some things. You know, maybe see different ways of seeing different ways of doing things, and also bringing in different ways of doing things so we can see different ways of doing things. So, but that's part of it. And from the government point of view, is to keep populations, keep the country populated. That's really what it kind of comes down to. But I don't think we're really dealing with with some of the real in-the-dirt issues. And from what I've seen two towns that were primarily black turn into primarily Latino. And there are a bunch of things that are wrong with that. And from the reason why Trump is able to pump the immigration issue is not because of fear. It's because of what people, maybe it's fear, but it's because of what people see, not because of what he's saying. When school system is 85% black, it is now 85% Latino. In 10 years, there is a thing. It's something that's going on. You see here kind of decimation of the black community or the movement of black community, which means that there are no stores. They're harder for you to educate your kids because you're now in another school district, which you're not the dominant, population. But you see even... not even just in that, but in economic terms. In the 1980s, there was a warehouse here, it was a food warehouse for a grocery store. You used to go in and get a job at $13 an hour. 3 months, $17 an hour. And then back in the 80s, that was a way you could actually feed your family and not, you know, and not have to have your wife work or work, you know, she could work part-time or whatever it was. But it was a great job because it was union, and you could only go up from there. At this current time, and it's been over the last 20 years, you can't get a job in that warehouse for more than $8 an hour because it's all temp agencies now. And every person in there is from Latin America. And what you're seeing is when you have a person that was in there, and I work in a bucket factory, when the workforce kind of flipped over to a workforce that cannot protest, they cannot unionize because they're illegal, because they can get Social Security numbers and so on and so forth, you cannot protect yourself in a lot of ways. So if there's unsafe equipment, you can't go on strike because the person next to you can't go on strike. And then when you bring in the population,
but
you continue
to... Are you generalizing based on some specific instances that you know?
This is my experience.
Okay.
This is solely from my experience and from what we're, you know, what I'm looking at from a layman or a U.S. citizen on the bottom of the totem pole, what it's really, you know, what it's about, how it's affecting me, and how it affects me.
How do you think the solution ought to be arrived at? What is the solution here?
It's not fair to be displaced,
but this is a fact of life. People are displaced every day. And when in the context of immigration, this is why I'm asking the question, what were you imagining immigration policy to be that in fact is turning into or has turned into something else that puts you now at a disadvantage?
Well, one of the things is that when you begin to say, you know, you're going to give amnesty to people who've been here working and so on and so forth, that what I've seen immigration be used as is a weapon, and not just against African Americans. It's used against the American worker. It's part of the ways to break up the unions. Because you can bring someone at $8 an hour for a job that was $17, you just replace all of them with temporary workers at $8 an hour. And now you don't have to pay that labor force. And you see that. You see that in the factories. You see that in the warehouses. All right? You see that in trucking industry now. People say, you go, like, uncle's driving a truck, he goes to FedEx, and he's like, what the heck is going on here? But this is what people see, and this is the threat that's there, because it's not the population. A lot of it has to do with the fact that the ability to earn money and earn a decent salary is undercut. And this wall is a farce. You got to understand, all these businesses vote Republican. Do they really want to stop immigration when they have cut the cost of their wages in half? They don't want that. People don't leave their country and come here with a dollar and a dream. They leave their country and come here because someone called them and said, listen, we can get you hired up here. We got jobs in this factory. You come stay with me. We'll make some money. We'll do this and that. And I'm not knocking people who are doing that. That's not, you know, that's not the thing. But they're being used. They're being used. They're being used against the American worker to reduce wages, because that's what's happened across the board, from the hotel industry to anything in production, anything in warehousing, anything in anywhere across the board, even, like I said, even in trucking. They're being used to lower the wages of people, and that's just on the ground level. And you're talking about resources being used. And the ability, and as you pointed out about the center in Brooklyn, where Israeli people can come in or Orthodox Jews can come in, and they got a process of how to get government benefits, you know, straight across the board. There is networks, and there are books, there are things that help people to do that. The problem is You know, when a person, a woman takes her son and puts him into another school because it's a better school district and a better opportunity, she goes to jail. Someone comes in illegally, and you're going to tell them that, okay, we're going to give you amnesty, you can keep your job, you can do this, and no penalty at all. And all the woman did was try to make a better opportunity for her son in this country as a citizen. And non-citizens can come in and do the same thing and have no punishment. So that's really kind of a slap in the face to the American citizen. That's one of the reasons why you get this pushback on immigration, not just fear, not just racism. It's because it's economic and it's an unfair system. You want to talk about the loans that people get? They come in 5 years, no taxes. They get loans to open businesses, and then they just pass it along. So wealth is being built by first and second generation people, where there are people who have been here since the beginning of the country, can't get a loan to open a business or a permit to open a business. And we know that that prejudice, and we know that that, not everywhere, but we know that these roadblocks exist for a lot of folks that are here trying to create a business, being black, being even Latino, whatever it was, that those things exist for citizens. But it just seems that on this base level, that it's really unfair to the citizens of the United States, especially those that are near the bottom and poor and so on and so forth, that try to make a way. And you can see someone that come in with the same status but be given all the breaks that you should have been given as a citizen because your people served in the Army. Your people served and defended the country. Your people built the country. And yet you can't reap the benefits.
Very insightful, Jay. Very insightful indeed. And thank you for contributing today. Thanks so much. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air. How are you? Not getting David. Okay, so he's no longer gone. He's gone. Okay, so we're getting some very interesting perceptions about this thing called immigration. And so far, none of it, or I should say very, very little of it, jives with what the explanation is by official sources, what immigration is, what it's supposed to do. Two entirely different points of view. So what it seems to suggest is that, you know, it's resonating very differently with people. And it's hinting at a total break between the policy, the articulated policy of immigration, and what it ends up being. Bill from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Yatrice, and to the PRN family.
Thank you.
Yes, I've been listening.
Good afternoon to you.
You're welcome. Thank you. I've been listening to all of the comments, and I think everyone has a good point. But first of all, especially regarding African Americans who have been here in this country since slavery, we, I think, have a certain view of immigration, and we have an extreme sensitivity to immigrants who are coming from other countries. And we do, rightly, I think, in many instances, feel we're not getting our share, and that people have certain, who are coming from other parts of the globe, have certain benefits and privileges that have not been offered us, and that is the truth. And that doesn't make it right. However, going back to your mantra about clarity, I think we must have clarity about where we're at this point in history in 2019. And I'm looking at a map now of the world, and I don't think people realize, as you spoke about, people are really trying to survive. And there are wars all over the world. There are climate catastrophes going on where there are floods and droughts and struggles for food and water. And, you know, throughout the Africa and the Middle East, you have people pushing into Europe and Asia. And a lot of, and throughout Latin America, we have people coming north. And so immigration is as natural as the sun rising. And also it's about survival. Politically, I mean, there was a book in college that I read called A Piece of the Pie, talking about everyone, especially in this country, pertains to blacks and whites and white immigration, about how you can just look at neighborhoods, back up to the 1980s that were pretty much stayed the way that in terms of Irish, Italian, Jewish, black, and so forth. And now all of that's been stirred up. And I live in Sunset Park in Brooklyn, and I literally live in a, I'm a minority. I'm African American. I mean, my barber is Chinese. You know, the guy at the bodega is from Yemen. And my, where I live is like a little United Nations, and that's a wonderful thing. And so, we're in flux. And that's pretty much the way it has always been. And there's going to be these struggles and these challenges, and we're not going to always get what we feel we deserve, and people aren't going to always feel that their heritage has been appreciated and considered. And yes, African Americans have laid, the foundation for others from the entire globe to come here and immediately take advantage of all the benefits and privileges and rights that we fought and bled and died for. And I think it's, they're coming to survive, and it's not, they're not coming to learn about our history, and that doesn't make it right, but that's the reality.
Yes, it is. It's about surviving, but we have a unique circumstance, I would say, in the United States, because yes, this idealistic view of immigration, and I'm not using it in a bad way, I'm just saying that people have a very patriotic and idealistic view about what immigration is. But that's what, right, if you were to line up the idealistic view against the realistic and historical view, what are you likely to find, Bill?
You're likely to find what we're beginning to see, a lot of conflict. Not just nationally, but this can spread globally. And I was reading an article today about how China and India are going to be the world's leading economies in a very short time by 2030. Where does that place the United States, being number three or four? And so the card that the U.S. has is its military. And so there are concerns that, if we, meaning the United States, if our position in the world starts to fall, especially with new superpowers such as China and India rising, are the powers that be here going to stand for that? Are the oligarchs in this country going to want that to be? And so there could be potential for military conflicts, in a very short time that could be catastrophic. I'm not sure if that's answering your question, but it's these are.
Well, I was hinting at the fact that our view, the people's view of immigration, may, yes, very possibly differ markedly, mm-hmm, from the government's view of immigration.
True.
What do you think the difference might be?
I think the difference is, people want things to be the way they have always been, and government interests are especially in this capitalistic society, as for profit, and we've seen right here in New York how neighborhoods have changed with the push from the corporate or the government sectors for profit. That's occurring right now. And so there's people in Bed-Stuy, their neighborhoods are, in Bed-Stuy, New York City, their neighborhoods are radically changing. You have what I call, urban pioneers, gentrifiers coming in. The same thing is starting to creep into other parts of New York City, as well as you look at what's going on in Seattle and San Francisco with, you know, Amazon and .com, you know, moving in, and now even into the metropolitan Washington area. So government and corporate forces push changes in communities, or and for lack of better words, for immigration, both nationally and internationally.
Do you think we generally ignore the less than beneficent purposes that the government says it has for immigration? Do you think we fail routinely to link the actions of government, in fact, in making immigration necessary?
Mm-hmm. I think it's a lack of education from the government that really informs communities from a local level to a state level and a national level about immigration. Most people here in this in the United States have no idea about the laws of immigration that you know, restricted the Chinese 100 years ago. There were laws, you know, in many communities you have a significant number of Chinese laundries and restaurants. Well, why is that? Because there were certain provisions that allowed for Chinese immigrants to come in at a time when other populations from around the world were being restricted. And so we have, as citizens, a basic ignorance about government influences on immigration matters, and we have some stereotypes that go along with those things as well.
Thank you very much for contributing today. I really appreciate it, Bill. We have to talk a little bit more, a lot more, it seems, about immigration, what we understand it to be. And we may be surprised that what we understand it to be isn't at all what it is, nor is it at all what it was intended to be. Immigration was not a feel-good thing, but it was a necessary thing to facilitate in a regulated way the movement of people from one place to another, from one country to another. It wasn't so much that people felt a need to leave, although that has always been part of the history of immigration. It was that governments among themselves, or took it upon themselves, to decide how to control the movement of people from where they were into the United States, and how to control their progress and their movement even in the United States once they got here. Immigration has had a pretty rusty history, very much race-based. Bill is absolutely right. Some of the first people to suffer as immigrants were Chinese. We also make the mistake, and we have to remember to correct ourselves, when we equate slavery with immigration. By no means are they the same thing. Slavery was an involuntary action imposed upon people who were seen as unable to do anything about their circumstances. Slavery was an integral part for many of the developing world at the time, many of the nations of the developing world at the time, as an integral part of their own development. Free labor and free access to resources that they never would have had at all. There isn't a single cocoa tree grown in Germany. But they corner the market on chocolate. there isn't a rubber plantation in the United States. But they cornered the market on rubber because, well, was a leading car producing, auto producing nation. They need rubber. And it was so easy to mount an attack in Vietnam and just take the plantations. And the concession, the backhanded concession, was to accept Vietnamese immigrants years later after the destruction of their country by war as a kind of penance that they agreed to pay to cleanse their consciences. So we have immigration happening that way. I hear the music. It says, I got to say goodbye. So I'll say goodbye until tomorrow. We'll meet up again tomorrow for Free Your Mind Friday. Bye-bye.